You're listening to a Zone Radio podcast, zoneradio.co.za. It is just past nearly quarter past four, and time for us to chat to a remarkable man. He is sitting in the studio here with me. His name is Lapis Labuschagne, and it's nice that you actually managed to get here.
Oh, thanks. Rubberdin, man.
We had him scheduled for a couple of weeks ago, and your car wouldn't start.
Yeah. Old car.
Old car. All right, but we wanted you to come in anyway, so we made a plan. All right, let's get more serious. Welcome. It's nice to have you here.
Thanks, Richard.
And you are the driving force. I think that would be the right word to use. I know you probably wouldn't use that word, but we all know that you're the driving force behind a remarkable operation that goes on right under our noses here in our valley at Soetvaart, the Soetvaart Environmental Education Center.
That's right.
Yeah. And you started this, didn't you?
Yeah, way back 2001. Yeah, we started it. We started it at that. So at that stage, I was a teacher at Komiki Primary School, and I wanted to, always wanted to break away from formal teaching. I thought there were enough teachers around, so I saw this spot there in Soetvaart, and believe it or not, don't laugh at me, I jogged past one day and I saw those old derelict buildings, and I started asking questions, and the next moment we were on up and running, and here we are, 22 years later.
22 years later and doing remarkable work. Okay, tell us a little bit more of the background to this and the process that you went through to actually get this facility, because this is a world-class facility, and a lot of hard work has gone in. Tell us a little bit about that process.
Okay, like I say, Richard, I was a teacher my whole life. I taught at various schools across the country, including in the valley. I taught at Fishhook Senior High School. I had my old pupils. I taught at Komiki Primary. So I've been around in teaching, and I always had this big love for nature and passion for nature and looking after nature and teaching people more about it. When the opportunity arose, I immediately I went for it straight away, and I was very, very, very fortunate that I was at the right place at the right time those years. Someone took a photograph of me and some kids up in the mountain teaching them about fynbos, and the photograph appeared in the old Sunday Times Metro. They had a Metro section, and then someone took a pic. It was a dad. He happened to work at the Sunday Times. And it appeared in the Sunday Times. And that Sunday, a lady from Parmalat, the milk people, she normally buys the Afrikaans paper on the way back from church. And that day, the Afrikaans paper didn't arrive yet. And she bought the old Sunday Times with this in. And she saw it, and the Monday she phoned me. She said, listen, as it happened, Parmalat wants to put money into education. And this looks really interesting. So I had a meeting with them. They asked me how much money did I want those years. I remember, because the buildings that were there were very old and derelict. And I said about 100,000. And they said, no, we'll give you 500,000.
Wow.
And they, we rebuilt everything. The city of Cape Town came very wonderfully to the party. They helped us get the lease for the buildings. We built dormitories. We built a wall. Kitted all out of beds. It was a big project from the word go. But I must say, from the word go, it was a success. There's a huge demand for this type of education. I think bigger than ever before right now.
Are there any other facilities like this in the Western Cape?
Sadly not. Sadly not. You know, Richard, my personal view is, we had, the other day at a meeting, I was talking about this. There should be 20 facilities like this in Cape Town. Mm. Just in Cape Town, all kids should go through this at least once in their primary school.
It should
career.
Be part of their syllabus.
Absolutely.
It should be.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And while you were doing all this building, was the teaching and the learning still going on?
In the beginning,
while you were doing
you
continued.
Yes, I still carried on teaching. Mm. I was at Komiki Primary those years, just teaching there. And I was writing the syllabuses and teaching myself a bit more about what I was going to teach in the end of the day, about the ocean and birds and whatever. And I haven't looked back since. It's been going well, I must be honest.
All right, now I'm going to ask this question up front so people can think about it, and then we'll talk about the programs because there's so many different programs.
Yeah.
But how are you funded now?
Our model we work on is we get your welfare schools that can afford it.
Mm.
Strange enough, some schools won't come to us. They say we're too cheap. The welfare schools, like we just had the German school or Wet Pups there, the more Herschel girls.
Mm.
They fund, and that we're NGO, we're a Section 21 company, so we're a non-profitable organization. And then from that money, we will sponsor poorer kids. Like I've got a group of 50 or 100 kids from Ocean View coming now from Marine Primary. And then also we're very, very lucky through the years. We've got wonderful, wonderful, stunning, thank you guys, sponsors.
Mention them.
Yeah.
You can mention them.
Yeah, through the years, obviously, we had Parmalat, we had the Deutsche Bank at some stage, we had Lotto funding at some stage, some of our big sponsors here in the Valley, CalPAC sponsors at a lot. Not enough, obviously. The more sponsorships we get, the more children. Because my number one on my list is to get the poorer children there that really, really can't afford it. Because unfortunately, money is always involved everywhere. So we've got a lot of smaller sponsors in the Valley as well. Munstone. I mean, Mark just gave us the most amazing lot of paving. Now we're paving the center out at the moment. Buco, local company. Buco's always there for us. Thanks, Gavin. And I'm so scared I'll leave some out. But smaller businesses here in the Valley, and the goodwill among the people towards the center is absolutely astonishing. It's really, I ask for something and people come to the party. Always, always, always.
I think they get what you're trying to do. I think it's not a difficult concept to get your head around, is it?
No. Environmental education through fun and adventure. That's our motto.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm looking at your website. Folks, that website is soetwater.org, and you'll know you there because there's a moose whale on the landing page there. It's also a landmark if you're looking for the place down in Soetwater.
I'll fetch that whale in Durban back of a truck. Yeah. Famous whale. That whale is, I think, 50 years old this year. That same whale.
You can go and check out. Okay, let's look at some of the programs. I mean, then there's not just one program. There's many different types of programs, and I'm guessing a team of people now that are teaching different things. Go through this.
Yeah. So our main programs are 3 day environmental education programs. The schools will come to us for 3 days. We sleep up to 100 kids at a time, and then we do snake shows, bird. We've got a bird sanctuary on the property, birds, snakes, rock pool studies, beach ecology. You name it, we insects, gogos, fynbos, that's our more formal teaching, and then subjects that we teach. We've got activities all around it, and then we mix it up. Like I said, our motto is education through fun and adventure, and then we've got 3 different obstacle courses, raft racing, night hikes. So the kids are playing and while they're learning.
Oh, yeah.
And then we also, our specialist stuff that we do is leadership camps. We are very proud of that we do. So we train up prefect bodies or groups of kids. And then just over fun and adventure stuff. At the moment, as we speak, we've got 95 children there. I just sneaked away quickly to come over here from Jeffreys Bay, Nochal. They come all the way down here to us.
Which says they haven't got one of them there.
Yes. they're not just here for us. They're going to Table Mountain and other, but we spent today teaching them about various things. Yeah, so it's going really well. And
Lappies, to come back to the question of the need for more of these, have people tried to steal you away from us?
people come to me and say, a guy from Port Olive recently came there, sneak, and eventually I found out he wants to open a center like mine.
Mm.
And I said to him, why do you go, are you scared about this? I'll give you absolutely everything that you need for free.
Mm-hmm.
I've got no copyrights on any of our materials. And I really mean it, because I would love to see more of these centers going, because the need for it is tremendous. Thereby us, I can tell you right thing, Richard, to give you a simple example. Some schools that come to us, when they arrive the first day, we do our famous snake shows. When we take the first snake out, the kids want to run the doors out of its post. But an hour later, and just an hour later, our hands are full trying to keep the kids away from touching the snakes and putting them around their necks and that sort of stuff. That's the power of education. Mm. And they see those animals in a totally different light. And that's what we do. We must put that switch on to make people more aware of the beautiful.
That's a kid that's going to maybe encounter a snake in their garden and not put a spade through it.
Yeah.
And say, hold on, let's just get somebody in here. The snake is this, and it
get a value of it in nature.
Yes, because they are valuable in nature.
Oh,
they really
absolutely.
Everything in nature is valuable in nature.
Absolutely.
All right, tell us some of the more interesting occurrences there. I'm sure you've had some funny instances.
Many. How can many? Sorry, you're catching me a bit unaware. I wasn't thinking of it, but we get so many. And a while ago, we had a group of kids there. This is my favorite story. And one of the things, we write the whole program down for the 3 days that the kids, we tell them, I want you to look at that program for two reasons. Number one, that you can prepare yourself for now. 8 o'clock is breakfast. When are you ready? And secondly, that you don't terrorize and drive Mr. Luppies to a nervous breakdown by nagging me nonstop, which the kids do. Yeah. Mr. Luppies, what are we doing next? Yes, that can drive you nuts, especially if you've got 80 excited 10-year-olds. Mm. And we had a school last year that we sponsored, one of the sponsored schools, and sadly, kids from Cape Town that's never seen the sea. They're 10 years old. Yeah, you get it. We get it often. There's kids are in our area that never get out of the areas they're in. Mm. Poverty huge. But we try and give those kids. But anyway, so just after we finish this, I'll do an orientation. I go stand by the board. Yeah, these four lighties come jumping up and down there. Mr. Lappies, what are we doing next? And I've been sarcastic to them. I said, guys, we're going on a night hike, but that's now 10 o'clock in the morning. It's being sarcastic. And off they run. You won't believe it. About 2 minutes later, they're all back of their torches, eyes that big, going on a night hike. I'll never explain. That is innocent child. Oh, I've got many stories like that. But, you know, it shows you the innocence that the kids still have in them.
But with that innocence comes huge responsibility for you.
Yeah.
Because you are shaping the minds of these children.
Yes.
And as a teacher, you would know that. And, I have huge respect for teachers. I really do. I know you said to me, for my sins, I'm a teacher. No, I think that I do have huge respect for teachers. I have huge respect for teachers. And just look at the way they dealt with COVID. And you must have had your challenges there as well.
Yeah.
But teachers were the people that went that extra, let the plan gemacht. They're the ones that made a plan to keep teaching.
Yeah.
Everybody else was looking, okay, well, it's COVID. We can't really do anything. Let's just wait it out. But teachers don't see life that way. They don't see it that way. And they move. So I have huge respect for teachers and what you're doing. But there's a huge responsibility that comes with the molding of a child's mind.
Very.
Do you feel the pressure of that on a daily basis, or are you just having so much fun with them?
We have a lot of fun, but sadly, Richard, I've said it many times. Someone can write many different doctorate theses at our center because we get so many different kids from so many different backgrounds coming to us, from the poorest of the poor in Cape Town to the wealthiest kids. And the inputs from our side is the same. Our programs are the same. Mm. And it's amazing to watch the psychology that goes on. But some of our schools, the teachers are too terrified of the parents. The one teacher said the other day to me, we're too terrified. The parents are ruling us. And that I find very sad. I call them the helicopter moms.
Yes.
They say the helicopter moms are hovering above us all the time. And I find, sadly, the children are scared. The kids are scared of darkness. The kids don't play anymore. That's why we've got all these play in our programs. Mm. I believe children should still play. And today, I had an example. This school from Jeffreys Bay, the kids just jolled the entire day from 7 o'clock this morning. and till they're still busy. They've got Poikie Kos competition now and campfire concerts tonight. And they're learning all the time as we go. So sad, I can see that. And then your big poor schools that is 60, 70 kids per teacher, that's also the other side of the coin, which is sad to watch.
Do the helicopter moms, as you call them, affect you in any way? Or is it an environment that they're not too au fait with, so they kind of leave it with you?
We had schools, they come on camp with the kids.
Yeah.
Just to see the little Johnny, which is like vegetarian and 25 other things, and his bag full of medicine. Yeah, we get them, and I banned it. I said, no ways, I don't want the moms here. You know, and and then that child is just a child again. He's not being pipped up like we say.
Okay.
But listen, I must quickly, before I get in trouble, 99.9% of our parents are great. Yeah. They're not spoiling their
They
kids.
See the value.
They see the value, yeah.
I don't know whether this is the right question to ask, but then I'm known to ask questions that get me into trouble. And if you don't feel like answering it, then you won't get into trouble with me. But
I'm always in trouble.
both of us. Do you find that there is in this environment, which is foreign to a lot of kids? There are very few, there are a handful of kids. I mean, I can think of, I think he's on your board, Wayne van Heerden.
Yeah.
His kids grew up, literally spent more time in the sea than they did in their beds at home.
Yeah.
There are very few kids like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And they've grown into great kids, and they have a healthy respect for nature and all these kind of things. But most kids are not like that.
No.
Do you find that there is a difference in behavior or entitlement when the more affluent schools come versus the more poverty-stricken schools? Is there a difference in behavior in the children?
Yeah. Sorry, I'm going to go a little bit back on the story. That recently I had to do a lecture for a hiking club, and the topic was the wilderness experience. And I thought, easy topic. And I started going into it, and I'll tell you what, I landed up with this big study. And in there, they addressed this, that kids, the bond children, especially from affluent rich schools, and we're very protective of our children, of all our activities at our camp, hands down from every single school, and the night hike is the highlight. A night hike, a simple night hike. We take the kids up the dunes and whatever, and all the schools, we ask them, what was your favorite activity? The night hike. What? You know, it's for us, we grew up, you could go outside, like you say, Wayne's kids. But coming back to that,
he was lucky if they came home at night.
A lot of us, older generation, we grew up like that. My mom sometimes didn't know where we were. We were sleeping by the river or whatever. But sadly, coming back to that study to answer your question, psychologists and child psychologists and them are now very, very concerned, Richard, that the suicide rate among kids has shot up by like 30-40%. They estimate 70% of our children since COVID are now depressed, suffer from depression. And they are coming out with figures now that is horrific. You cannot believe what's going on in the heads of kids nowadays because of the away from nature. Kids are not part of nature anymore. They don't know what it is. And it's a frightening study that I did there. I got a big scrap myself, that we are now getting, we're moving into cities, you know, the kids never play, they don't climb trees. We've got obstacle courses there, Richard, and say compared to 20 years ago, the kids just climbed those obstacles like no problem. Nowadays, we have the kids are weak, because it's from computer generation kids. They never go out of their homes. They don't go run around, whatever. And we see that at the center. We see that. It's so sad for me to watch it.
The problem is that you only have that child for a couple of days. You have to make a lasting impression on them so that when they get back to the environment where they've come from, they go out and seek opportunities to climb a tree or go down to the... Yeah. I think it's quite... it's a massive responsibility.
Yeah, I mean, I like to say, people ask me, how do you know that you are reaching anywhere? And I always say, but all we want to do, we just want to plant seeds in kids' heads. We want that child to go home. And we also give each kid a beautiful booklet We have a whole program in. I should have brought one for you now. Sorry, man.
No problem.
They are. It's like really, we're very proud of it. That gets sponsored by Calpac and them. And it's a booklet they fill in there daily. But it's all the stuff we do is in there. And the aim of that is they take it home and teach their parents. That's to us very important. Mm. There's sections in on whales and birds and plants and whatever. Like a fun book the kids get. And we hope to encourage the kids to take it further at home. Go read up more. Go check out more. And that's actually, I think it's helped. It is working. The other day I had a phone call from a gentleman. He came to us 20 years ago as a small 10-year-old. He came to us on the camp. He was in Ocean View in Marine Primary. And he phoned me and he said they're a group of dads. And they came and they've never forgotten what they learned at our camp 20 years ago, and if it's possible, they want to do a dads and lads camp.
Oh,
a whole lot of them, because they want us to teach their children what we taught them those years. You know, that was the biggest compliment anyone has ever given.
I think it's a great idea.
You see, it changed his life, what he learned those 3 days with us, you know. No, sorry, I'm not boasting, but I'm very proud of that story.
You have a right to boast. I know that you're not the boastful type, you have a right to boast. You've impacted so many people's lives. And, you know, somebody said to me that, what is a legacy? Well, that is. What you've done there is. Because it doesn't matter what becomes of you. People are always going to remember Luppies, Mr. Luppies. They're going to remember that. And that's a very, very special thing. This question, what do you need? How does this community help you? Or the greater community, because people listen to us, you know, overseas, and they listen to us around the country online. But what do you need?
Wow, that's a big question. Where can I leave my list? let me start off by saying people are immensely kind. Immensely, immensely, immensely. And obviously, we're always looking for sponsorships to sponsor poorer schools from our local communities around here. Especially for specialized camps, like, you know, unfortunately, everything costs money.
Yes.
You know, the kids must
eat. You've got to feed them.
Staff must get paid. Yeah. You know, that's all. And then there's forever lots of maintenance going on at a center, especially if you've got a really, if I must say so, stunning bird and snake sanctuary.
And it's right on the beach.
It's right on there. Yeah, right there by us. We've all permits and everything's above board. Mm. So they costing me an arm and a leg, always feeding them and the maintenance of the, because we're right on the sea. There's always something breaking. There's always something, you know, broken. It's a permanent fight against that. And we're thinking, I've got a wonderful new board, and we're thinking of expanding the center. Because Soetwater now, we recently heard, maybe I'm talking a bit prematurely, Soetwater Resort as such, which had a bit of a bad name in the old days, is now officially going to be turned into a nature reserve.
Okay.
And we're in the heart of it. And
that's good news for you.
Very good news.
Yeah, that because it takes the commercial aspect right off the table. Yeah.
And more than that for us, Richard, that we're now sure that the wildlife and the, because Soetwater has got really exceptionally special stuff. There really are plants and animal species there that are red data, which means they scarce will be, now we're sure they will get protected now, you know, because it's early days, but I'm quite convinced that that's going to happen now. So we're forever looking to expand. We want to rebuild the center. We're going to build more dormitories on it. Just make the place even better than it is. It's very old and it's a bit derelict, I must be honest. You know, some of the stuff is, you can fix it so many times and you can't fix it anymore.
Yeah, then it needs to be replaced,
And just transport and whatever. There's always a... this week alone, we've got this 95 kids from Jeffries. When they leave on Friday, we've got Stellenbosch University coming for the weekend. There's another 95 people coming. So it's mattresses that needs fixing up all the time. And then Monday next week, we've got a holiday camp. So it's busy all the time.
Let me ask you this. Maybe it'll give people an indication of what is required. And I'm sure that there are different prices for different courses. Mm-hmm. But the average, the average camp is what, 3 days, 4 days?
Yeah, it's 3 days. Okay. It normally starts Monday to Wednesday afternoon,
mm-hmm.
and the first kids, they come Monday morning and they leave after lunch on we feed them everything there, so they leave after lunch on day three. Then Wednesday morning the next lot arrives, so long they we keep the kids apart from mm-hmm. from the groups apart till Friday, and then Friday the next group arrives till Sunday.
Okay.
But that's more, the weekends are more like clubs and specialist groups, like the aquarium and the Shark Center comes there quite often. So we work a lot with other like-minded organizations.
What's the cost per child?
I think roughly for everything, the prices included, food, the programs, accommodation, it's just under 1,000 rand per camp for per child. Are you with me?
I'm shocked because that's... For a poorer school, that's a lot of money. For an affluent school, that's nothing.
Yes, yes.
You know? Yes. I believe you got a bit of a donation box there. People can put a donation in as well.
Yeah, and but that's now the max price that we charged, you know, for them. And like I said, part of that built into it, and I tell the kids when they come to the affluent schools, part of that 1,000 rand or whatever is built into our trust fund, you know, which will sponsor other children, you know. And it's not often, you know, we get poor schools. I'm told by my board never to talk about money. I get very embarrassed when I talk about money. I'll be very honest. You know,
it's but not, you need it.
You need it. And I hate talking about it because I've known to someone tell a teacher of a poor school, man, just bring the kids and just handed them, come for free, it's fine. Yeah. We'll worry about it later.
And somehow later is always taken care of.
Yeah, yeah. No.
And I think that at some level that is because the heart it's coming from is not greedy.
Yeah.
And I think that approach is what has been the success of this environment. The passion that you have, the team that you built up around you, the trust that these kids have in you, such trust that they come back 20 years later and they want to do this all over again with their kids. Lapis, I don't know. We've got to get you back.
Oh, fantastic.
We haven't scratched the surface of what the potential is for – well, you know what the potential is, but and I'm sure a lot of people listening to us in the valley know, but people beyond the valley and beyond these mountain ranges who are listening to us now may be thinking to themselves, well, hang on. There's something very special here. Ideally, you want people to come here, but your objective is to see that model rolled out elsewhere.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And if there's anybody that can help with that, well, they must phone
Absolutely.
You. They must give you a call.
Absolutely.
All right. Judy can't believe that that is 1,000 rand for 3 days. No, I can't believe it either. I think that – look, I do concede that for a child that is coming from a disadvantaged background – 1,000 rand is a king's ransom. But for a child from a more affluent school, you know, that is not really a lot of money. But I also understand you don't want a discrimination at the price point either. So I do get that. I don't know where to begin to thank you. My youngster went there.
Just all right. Okay.
Just by the way.
Okay.
Yeah. He went there for a camp with his school, and it was incredible.
Oh, which school, Richard?
I think it was Edgemead. Edgemead.
Yes. Okay. Which schools from far away.
So my boy has been there, and I know that it was. And he was a little older group. He was around the sort of 14 years old group, group. He did come back and tell me that he had the first cigarette he had was there, but that just
never mentioned it. We teach the kids that's that's extra though.
But he did tell me that anyway. Lapis, I don't know where to begin to thank you on behalf of the community.
Thanks very much.
What you're giving is coming from the heart. It's coming from a man who really believes in nature. And believes in children. And I think that the greater belief that we have in children, the better our future looks.
Yeah.
Because they are our future.
Yeah.
And if we can get their minds off in the right direction when they are impressionable, then that's a good thing. And that is the role of teachers and special people like yourself. Now, you may tell me that you're an outdoorsman and you're all that. You're still a teacher and a very bloody good one as well. So, Lapis, thank you so much for coming in this afternoon. And if there's anything that this little radio station can do to help you, all you have to do is ask.
Thank you very much.
And that's not an idle promise. That is, we will do what we can. And I hope that in the future we're going to be hearing from you. Here's another message coming through. How does one go about sponsoring a child?
Wow, that's very kind.
How would they do that?
I think the best will be just to contact us, our email address, and we'll send you the bank details. Or it's on there. On our website, I'm sure it's on our website.
If it's not on the website, then we will make sure that this Sharon gets this email address.
Thank you so very much for that. I'll make sure that goes to the right child, and I'll make sure that child writes you a small little thank you note. That's the way we do it. That's so kind. I'm feeling very emotional about that. Thank you very much to whoever.
That lady's name is Sharon.
Thanks, Sharon. Thank you.
All right, we can let you go now. Not because we want to, but because we have to. And she's given you the thumbs up. We definitely want to get you back and get you back often, because what you're doing is just absolutely remarkable. And it takes very, very special people like yourself
to make
a difference in this world.
Thank you. If I may just add, Richard, the local schools here, you know, we live in the most beautiful place in the world. That I've heard from many tourists, and I've traveled myself a bit. And it's, for me, quite sad that we don't appreciate this place where we live in this valley around here, Cape Town, more. You know, because people don't know more. But thank you very much for having me on
your show. One last question before you go. If anybody just wants to go and have a look, they can do that. They can pop down there and just have a squiz.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to say to me this.
No, just come to security and preferably phone me first to make sure I'm around.
Yeah.
Our phone number, I think it's on the website.
On the website.
Yeah, and just give me a call first and make sure I'm there. You know, otherwise, more than welcome to come see what we do.
Okay. Lapis, thank you for everything that you do and everything that you are and everything that I believe you are still going to do. Have a wonderful afternoon.
Thank you very much, Richard. Thank you. Thanks.